Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett and I'll be your host today. This is the first in what I am really hoping will become a regular programming feature. I'm titling it Surviving the 21st Century. I look around me in absolute awe. Every day seems to bring some new and amazing discovery. Although not all of our advancements seem to be for the better. Some come at a pretty steep price. In particular, our health and well-being. I am delighted to have two incredibly smart people joining me today on the program, Manny Barling and his wife, Ashley Brooks. Manny and Ashley currently have two books in print, and a third one is being published very shortly. Manny and Ashley, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Hello, Simon.
I think a good starting point here would be a brief sketch of Manny's Odyssey, which I believe started in 1997 when you were diagnosed with colon cancer. Your life was changed completely. Can you tell us a little bit about your story?
Yes, and I think it's true for everybody who's diagnosed with cancer. It turns your life topsy-turvy. Everything goes upside down. After the surgery, it took me probably 3 months, 4 months to get out of bed and another couple of years to even find my legs.
Well, tell them what the surgery was.
Right. The surgery was for a malignant colon cancer. I had two tumors the size of golf balls, bright red and flaming in color. And it led to many other problems. It determined that I had Crohn's disease at the time. They removed part of my bowel. Suddenly, every bit of food I ate was worse than it was before, and I began to realize my body was hypersensitive to everything that I put into it. And I suffered for a few years. It got so bad, my gout caused my feet to swell to a point where I couldn't walk. I was in and out of a wheelchair for a few years, and my wife fretted over me and cared for me, and one day we got up and said, we have to do this on our own. The doctors weren't giving us enough information, and drugs nearly kill me, and taking drugs in this world, legal or illegal, are not a solution to any problem for anybody. So we embarked on our own mission to find answers, and we found them, and we're passing them on to you, along with my 13 years of experience and my wife's some 30 years of experience in nutrition, education, and her years as a private duty nurse in the emergency room when she did practice. Anything you want to add, Ashley?
I think you just about covered it, except that at the biggest problem from 1997 until we made the discoveries, including enzymes and the importance of enzymes, was that he would go out to lunch and be back in bed and in bed for 3 to 4 weeks at a time and in a wheelchair. So this was, he was very critical. And the medication they had put him on, we found out Vioxx, for one, had not been tested and gave him a heart attack. So this added on to the inflammations and all the other problems. And then he had massive weight gain. He could eat nothing and still gain weight. So he couldn't absorb. He had a malabsorption problem as well. It's all brought on by the lack of enzymes and in the food.
Wow. So, I mean, literally, you would go out to lunch, and then that was you done for a couple of weeks.
And he'd have a normal-looking, what you would call a normal-looking salad, you know, a slice of bread. He would be, or even skip the bread, and he would still be almost falling out on the floor. He'd be done, finished. That was it.
Wow. Now, that's enough to stop, what make you want to stop eating out.
Completely, yes. And the research started, and I'd always been doing research, but we had started research in 1997 when he first got ill, and just mounds of research later, it's taken years to find the answers to have him drop 70 pounds, lose what was causing him to be inflamed, control the gout, control the arthritis, and his Crohn's is completely under control, and it's all been dietary combined with enzymes. And it's been the sickness was actually in the food.
Wow.
He couldn't handle the chemicals.
And Ashley, I know that you rarely discuss this in public, and I don't want to pry, but I know that you had a life-altering and life-threatening illness as well. So combined with that and the fact that you you are a registered nurse, I want to ask you a highly unscientific and in some ways very unfair question. How much blame do you put on our modern lifestyles for what happened to both you and Manny?
The blame goes in the food we were eating would be considered healthy if we knew that what was in the food. So food is medicine as long as you know the truth about the food. And I don't think the public, I know on myself, we weren't told the truth about the things we were buying in the market. And it wasn't until the discoveries of the things that were in the market, the chemicals in the packages, the hidden MSG, the genetically modified organisms that are part of our food. If I had known that, I would say even at any restaurant, at the cooking at home, it alters the person's chemistry in such a way that if you're not taking enzymes and if you don't remove them and you don't know about it, then, yeah, modern society is really affecting a lot of us. And I think a friend of mine once said recently that one of the hottest tickets in town right now is the chemo room, and there's standing room only. I mean, you know, so it's a big problem.
You mentioned enzymes. They're, my knowledge of chemistry and biology is somewhat limited. That they're naturally occurring substances, I believe in the body and in food, but they're destroyed in the cooking process.
Well, actually, they're not so much naturally occurring as they are the life force that drives every human body. Every thought you have, every moment of the day, including your sleep, including everything from pregnancy down the line, is created by some sort of enzyme in your body. They are essential. You cannot live without them. So in terms of acquiring enzymes, your body produces them, and you can also get them from various fruits. You can get them from the stems and roots of other fruits. But the problem for humans is at some point you no longer manufacture enzymes, and at that point your health is in danger.
But you can find enzyme supplements or...
Right. So basically what we preach in our books is if you're having certain health problems, more than likely those health problems are caused by the fact that you're not producing sufficient enzymes for your body to digest your food and do other things. And since your body won't produce them, the only other way is to take them and take them in the form of supplements. And there are a number of them that are available, and there are a number of very fine manufacturers. We give a formula in our books that we think is successful for us and will work for other people, but we don't sell a product. We recommend what we consider to be the best products we discovered through our own testing. We receive no money whatsoever from anyone and stand to make no profit whatsoever on anything that we give, advice we give people within the book.
Right. Where would someone acquire these from? Is this something you would find in a nutrition store or somewhere like that?
Yes, that would be a good place to start. Any really good nutrition store will stock various digestive enzymes. And the key, of course, is to look at the brands. That's why we suggest brands, because there are synthetics on the market. If you buy a brand made by a major manufacturer, more than likely they try to use synthetics. For example, there are 437 drugs on the market that are synthetic enzymes. For your listeners that take even simple Zantac or any of these, Nexium, et cetera, they're actually chemical substitutes for enzymes synthetically created in the lab. and they're intended to replace something you can buy naturally in any health food store.
And the huge difference is that the body knows the differences. They say you can't fool Mother Nature, and it's a synthetic, so your body knows you're putting something in there that's not part of it. But when you take the organic, natural ones, which, again, we have spent years of developing the formula to, and again, we're not selling a formula, we're not selling any of this, it's part of the book, these are natural and part of your organic body to help turn on all the lock and key mechanisms that work within every single organ in your body.
Hmm. Okay, I'm going to switch gears here slightly. Maybe I'm wrong, but in my mind, the world of modern medicine is very much reactive rather than proactive. We treat the symptom rather than removing the cause. Are we pointing in the wrong direction?
Well, yes, I think everyone will agree that preventive medicine is always the best approach. The problem is the drug companies don't make a profit on preventative medicine. They make a profit on treating medicine. Just imagine if someone wiped out the cure for the common cold. Can you imagine how many drug companies would be out, not necessarily out of business, but would lose just a huge amount of sales? So if you look at it in that respect, they're not motivated at all to search for preventative solutions.
Ashley, you must have some thoughts as well.
I absolutely agree with what Manny is saying, and there's a whole process that we went through in the discovery, and yes, prevention. Had someone given me the information that we have spent years finding, and we had this information available to us in 1997, I would have kept him out of a wheelchair. And I also believe that had I had it before that time period, we could have kept him from having colon cancer. So yes, there's definitely prevention in knowledge.
Oh yes, there's no question. I could have easily avoided a very painful and difficult cancer surgery.
Crippling,
yes. Had I had the knowledge in the book, and if you read this book and you follow the basic principles of life in there, a person should be able to avoid ever having any kind of colon cancer, and at the same time, a wide variety of other potential cancers.
The cancer right now is one out of three men will have cancer in their lifetime, and one out of two women will have cancer in their lifetime. Now, there's got to be prevention there. That's what we're at.
Whoa.
How do you prevent that? And there's a whole solution to it.
You know, I've heard all sorts of statistics, but I think that's the first time I've heard those ones.
Yeah.
And
startling.
That is absolutely shocking.
Yeah.
They were shocking to us.
Yeah.
Wow. Let's talk about food in general. It seems to me that just about every week I turn on CNN or one of the other news stations, and I hear about these huge recalls. Generally, it involves salmonella. Why are we seeing these food problems so often? Spinach, beef, and this latest one, eggs. I mean, is there a problem in our food chain?
Yes, there is, and the problem is called factory farming. Right now, factory farming, which is the business of confining animals in small pens, in some cases, in the case of chicken, literally chickens, hundreds of them in a pen, pregnant animals are put in what are called gestation crates, locked into a jail that literally has 3 inches in every direction until they give birth to whatever their progeny is. And what's happened is that we've lost the ability to control the food that we make, where farmers cared over their animals so carefully during the Depression and earlier periods in farming. Now we have a cold-blooded corporate owner, in some cases families have done this for years, and their only interest is to see how many birds they can get out. So what's happened is nobody is really managing these farms correctly. If you've seen any of the photos on the news, they're pretty disgusting to look at. And when you look at it and go, gee, do I want to eat anything from this farm? The answer is no.
4 to 5 feet of manure. That's what they found at the Iowa farm, at the, that farm.
It was more like 5 to 8 feet.
Oh, my gosh. No, but one of the things that starts the process, too, not only the filth, but the fact that these animals are being fed feed that is not natural to their evolution. And the food they're getting is called genetically modified organisms, the same food that's going into our food. And the food is causing, say, for the eggs, it's causing the egg itself to convert, and the DNA changes within the embryo of the egg and causes salmonella. So if you don't get it from the filth, you're getting it from within the egg itself. It's really a danger right now. And this is only one outbreak we heard of with this factory farming. But there's also a couple incidences of typhoid fever that happened in California this month. And some more salmonella that occurred in that Nevada. That it's a serious issue that sort of is getting swept under the carpet that really needs to be brought forth and understood by people.
One of the things that I find amusing, although not in a particularly humorous way, is the way that these news organizations tend to spin the story.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, a good example is this latest egg business. They, trumped up the fact that there was this huge recall, 500 million eggs. But then to soften the blow, they said, this, of course, only represents somewhat less than 3% of annual production. And I'm thinking, well, that's a very strange statistic to come up with. You know, on the one hand, 3%, it sounds very minimal. But when you bear in mind that they did say the word annual,
recall is for a half a billion eggs.
Right.
Wait a second, a half a billion eggs.
Well, translated, that means that a half a billion people could be infected. Or if someone eats two eggs a day, it could be 230 million people. If only 1 out of 10 people who eat these eggs become ill, it's 50 million. In this case, last year we had 140,000 salmonella events, and 50,000 people died. I don't see that in the news. So what's happening with all the factory farming is, infections, diseases, illnesses are increasing, but because these are made by some of America's largest corporations, nobody wants to put that in the news, because anyone who watches the evening news will notice that every commercial is from a drug company. So why would you want to endanger your advertising by insulting someone from a drug company who is essentially paying the bills? And it's compromised the news.
In addition, this one really offended me about this particular company. They care so little about the people that the day after the recall, they released more eggs. They went to their other farm that was still having inspection and released more eggs.
No, that's not exactly what happened. Is they used a farm of theirs that was maybe at 50 miles away to release the next batch of eggs that they knew were contaminated before the FDA could get there and inspect them. And that's why there was a second recall of several hundred million. Had they acted responsibly and not released those eggs, there would not have been this huge recall. But they released it with a full knowledge that people were going to become ill.
Okay. I'm going to do my own role as statistician. Half a billion eggs. I believe that's about 2 eggs for every man, woman, and child that lives in the United States.
Well, it's about 1.5. But it doesn't really matter. It's just a huge number no matter what it is. It is not so much the number as it is the wanton disregard for the safety of Americans.
Plus, this particular farm had been sanctioned before, So I don't understand how you could be sanctioned and how to pay fines before and not be inspected.
Yeah. If you've read any of the articles and looked at any of it, a blind person walking on that land could tell that it was a disaster, and the FDA obviously had never been there and made any kind of inspection, or they would have known. I believe that the inspectors probably knew this was going to be a problem, and they avoided doing the inspection because they didn't want to deal with the political consequences of challenging the DeCoster family, who owns those properties. So their political might, to a great extent, allowed them to avoid scrutiny by the FDA.
I don't know what the solution is, though. I mean, I thought the FDA had, big sharp claws and brutal teeth, and yet they don't seem to.
Now, they're a political animal. Basically, the policies of the FDA are defined by the president. The president of the United States, unlike other areas in our government, has complete control over the actions of the FDA. He appoints the FDA's head, which has happened most noticeably under Ronald Reagan in 1980, where he appointed terminated the FDA head and put one in office immediately so he could stop an action against aspartame. And at the end of the day, aspartame was approved as a synthetic drug when everybody in the FDA had wanted it banned. So,
because of scientific proof.
Right. So basically, whatever the agenda is of the President of the United States determines what actions the FDA takes. So it's a political animal.
Bottom line, I think, this is for me bottom line. I said to Manny when he was really, really sick, no one gives an S about you but you. And I use the full word, but I'm not going to do that on the air. No, and I think individuals need to realize that you are responsible for taking care of yourself, of acquiring the knowledge that's going to allow your body to function. And it's looking after yourself and looking after your family. And what can you do to help your family stay healthy? And I think that's really the bottom line. So if you know there's factory farming at a particular egg farm, or you know there's factory farming where your chicken is coming from, you know, the only way you can really get around it and be 100% sure is going organic. And the organic, certified organic farms feed grass feed. There's no genetically modified organism. And I keep punching on the word organism because it takes organisms and viruses to create the seeds that are making people toxically ill, making the animals ill, it's making people ill.
Yes. I want to go back to the fact that you're claiming the FDA is a political animal. In many ways, it reminds me of the FCC. The FCC for many years has been the golden parachute for anyone involved in the telecommunications industry. It's a case of the fox guarding the hen house, if you'll pardon the pun there.
Oh, it's definitely one of our favorite puns.
Definitely.
Well, yeah, I mean, in many instances with the FDA, they hire people right out of the various drug companies and feed companies they're dealing with. In fact, when it comes to the issue of Monsanto's GMO seeds, at one point the lawyer for Monsanto was put into a position in the FDA, and within 2 years, all the information involving the testing that went along with their products were conveniently eliminated. A variety of different authors had to search to get them. There were whistleblowers within the FDA that released them, but generally, people who are appointed to the FDA by the president go in there with an agenda.
I'm not sure if I have this correct, but I'm sure you will correct me if I'm wrong. Is Monsanto the company that produced that series of seeds that were known as Roundup seeds? Theory
yeah.
being they were, resistant. Actual fact was you used more Roundup on them than you did on regular seeds.
The seeds are generally called Roundup Ready, And the reason to call Roundup Ready is because the whole purpose of the seed is to make the plant ready to use Roundup, which is a pesticide most people use on their grass and in their garden, on the plants. So some of these plants are genetically modified plants you buy in the store. You walk down the grocery aisle and you look at those peppers and tomatoes and all the rest, and they've been sprayed 3 or 4 times with a pesticide. And, of course, they claim that this has no effect on you, but anyone who's taken a look at what occurred during the cocaine interventions in South America will find that it defoliated South America and killed most of the indigenous people, destroyed all their crops, and just devastated the countries. And in our books, we actually put quotes from the various people who were affected by it and how much it affected them. So you're eating that every day if you're going to buy genetically modified foods.
If you have your 5 daily servings of fruits and vegetables per day per American Food Guide Pyramid, you're actually consuming an average of 10 pesticides a day.
That gives me a warm, fuzzy feeling.
If it's not organic, then that's what you're eating. Mm-mm.
It may also make you itch and scratch.
Perfect.
I mean, it sounds like you're listening to a bad version of a sci-fi movie where Dr. Frankenstein's in the lab designing all these exotic products and rubbing his wrist going, ha, 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 ha. Because that's the sense that you have when you take a look at what they do.
We were actually horrified. At first I kept saying, oh, this isn't really happening. This is not happening. And then I watched Manny get better and better each time I eliminated something else in our house that was non-organic, including the spices.
Oddly enough, on our latest book, which is titled It's Not Your Fault, it's about weight gain, obesity, and food addiction, we actually issue a challenge. If you go on an organic diet for a period of 60 to 90 days, you will find out that your body feels better. And we believe in the proof in the pudding style of research. I don't care what they do in double-blind studies. The question is, how does it affect you and I? And you can tell how it affects you immediately. You don't have to ask, am I feeling better? You will know the answer.
Ashley, you are a registered nurse.
Uh-huh.
So I know that means that you have great respect for the role that medicine plays, but that there's much that someone can do to augment that bottle of pills. The problem I have with your books, both of them, is that they might be a little complex for the man in the street. Have you both thought about producing something simpler?
Well, I don't think you can get them much simpler. We've tried to reduce them to the most basic terms. And even though some areas might contain a little too many statistics or whatever, people can get through them either that or just skip over them a little bit and go to the softer, more user-friendly parts of the book where we explain at length what some of this means. And I think that's very important.
Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about food additives.
Okay. Another topic, okay.
You got a week?
I'm going to pick on just one, because it is a favorite, MSG. Now, I first heard about MSG, I think it was probably back in the 1980s, and much of my information was, you know, from people who said, oh, I went to this Chinese restaurant, and boy, I mean, the food was great, tasted great, boy, I felt jittery later. And bit by bit, MSG started to appear as being the culprit in Chinese food. But that's not really the case. MSG is everywhere. I believe that in your books you have a startling statistic about the amount of MSG that everyone eats every year.
Yes, it's interesting. MSG was generally taken off the grocery shelves. It was once sold under the product name of Accent in the late 60s, which is when the Chinese food, what they call it, Chinese restaurant syndrome, occurred. But the reality is they just turned around and put it in every other kind of food. For example, in 1970, there was a huge uproar about MSG being in baby food. So the manufacturers, cognizant that they were being attacked on every front, said, okay, we'll remove it. Well, the next day, they turned around and they put it right back in the baby food by putting it into what's called yeast extract and a variety of other different names. So they basically went sub rosa or underground. And the FDA sadly permits them to do this. They're called clean labels. That's a label clean and devoid of MSG. So you can look at a product and say no MSG, but it'll have hydrogenized yeast, it'll have wheat extract, whey protein.
There's 145.
There are 145 different chemicals containing MSG that go into your food.
They're all hidden.
And in some cases, if you look at the label, it has four or five different varieties of it. So it's not just that they're putting it in, they're putting four or five different MSG products in. So at the end of the day, people are consuming huge amounts of MSG, and when you're ready, we'll get into what it does to individual human beings. But I believe there's a few documentaries I've seen, and Ash and I have actually done this ourselves, walked up and down the aisles of a grocery store and looked at every single product trying to find one that did not have MSG, and if they're not marked certified organic, I can assure you they have MSG in it.
The argument is this. Every person has glutamate within their neurological system, so within their brain, to allow themselves to fire properly. So the MSG, that's the argument, that, oh, well, it's natural. Well, no, the problem is that because it's in everything, you're getting way too much. And MSG is actually used for the rats to fatten them up so they can do a best obesity test.
Well, actually, I think we should go to the beginning. MSG, by the way, once was derived from wheat and other items. Now it's done chemically. It's cooked up in a lab. They basically use a variety of different chemicals and acids. And when the scummy surface bubbles off the top, they scrape it up and they dry it off into a powder. Well, that powder is a form of salt, and that's why they call it monosodium glutamate, because it has one ion of salt. So you're basically not only taking in the monosodium glutamate, you're taking in the salt. So if you're on a salt-free diet, it destroys your salt-free diet. So basically, and Ashley likes to describe it as a meth lab, because when you read a chemical book, and believe me, it was hard for me to read, so I didn't put it in the book, and Ashley didn't want to put in the book to make anyone suffer.
See, then you'd be very unhappy right now, sir.
Yeah. You swear you're watching the evening news, and there's a meth lab being broken up, because to a great extent, that's what it seems like. And I mean, it's just disgusting. So what are you eating? Oh, I'm eating something out of a pseudo-meth lab.
And what it does is it tricks your brain into thinking the food is wonderful, and then you have to eat. And then we hear people say they're overeating, they can't stop eating, oh, this tastes so great, it's because it's stimulating a part of their pleasure zone in their brain that makes them overeat.
So they found a legal chemical that effectively gives shoppers the same feeling as smoking something like marijuana that gives you the legendary munchies. So to them, there's nothing wrong with it because it's chemically addicting. We cite numerous scientists who just say right out that there's no other use for MSG other than to addict people to food. There's no real other use of the product. None.
Right. I mean, the traditional definition of it is that it's a flavor enhancer.
Right.
But that's not really what it does.
Well, look at that. That story comes out of a company called Ajinomoto. Ajinomoto was created in the early 1900s by the founder, his name's Akita in Japan, who developed MSG, and the sole purpose of doing it was to promote MSG. So all of these conversations about this started by their desire to sell the product. So all the information about MSG is generated by the people who are trying to sell it to you. So do you really want to believe that? It's like believing a car salesman sometimes. Well, if anybody listening to the show thinks that America's corporations act any better than a car dealer when they're trying to sell you something, I'd be very surprised. Because I think America's pretty astute at the conduct and actions taken by large corporations these days.
Indeed. I mean, MSG, though, is just one additive that you find in many foods.
Right. There are hundreds of what are called excitotoxins in more than 14,000 foods and certainly more than 9,000 on the shelf. And we point out, we even list the 10 largest corporations who provide the food stuff, because one of our problems in the country right now is that we really have a what I would describe as a robber baron situation like the late 1800s, where these people control everything. So at the end of the day, what you have is a small group of companies. One of them that we point out, Cisco, provides food to the airplanes, cafeterias, schools, everywhere across the country commercially, and all of their food is basically made from genetically modified foods and using MSG. So kids who go to school are just getting large doses of MSG in school food.
Combined with pesticides and herbicides. And I mean, it's just a terrible thing what's happening right now. But I need to correct something Manny said. It's 14,000 chemicals in 9,000 products.
Oh, my goodness.
It is scary, isn't it? The stats are very scary.
Yeah.
Actually, you were talking about schools. I don't know if you've ever had the opportunity to watch a delightful British series. Chef Jamie Oliver went on a campaign about school dinners, you know, school lunches, and how awful they were. And I watched the first couple of episodes in absolute horror.
Yeah.
I mean, there wasn't any food being served. I mean, it was deep fry heaven.
Oh my gosh, that's terrible. I haven't seen that.
Oh,
I have great respect for him. He's very, very good at what he does.
Oh, I recommend that if you ever see the series, do watch it. I mean, you will laugh and groan in the at the same time.
Well, Netflix it.
But I think it's important that people understand that that one of the reasons we're having this high obesity problem among the young is that the mothers eat the MSG in their food. The MSG penetrates what is called the blood-brain barrier in your brain. And you can draw the same analogy to cocaine, alcohol, and other drugs.
It affects the same areas.
And cigarettes. It affects the same
areas.
Much like nicotine, alcohol, cocaine, even marijuana.
The addictive center.
All of them. All they go through the hypothalamus, through this blood-brain barrier, and affect how your eating and appetite habits are. So when you eat MSG, it also goes through the blood-brain barrier and affects them.
It also affects the metabolism.
Right. So what happens is people who eat fast foods or drool and go, I want more, they're craving, they can't stand it, I'd like another order of fries, it's because the MSG has penetrated their blood-brain barrier, has stimulated their appetite control, and has told them they want more even though their body is satisfied and they're hungry. So when you see all these people who just can't resist eating frozen pizzas and I want more and all the rest and go into feeding frenzies, like a lot of times you see teenagers who just eat way too much, it's because what's in the food is stimulating them to eat more, whether or not their stomach and their body is satisfied from the nutrients.
And the fact that it's altered the metabolism within the body is also the reason they're gaining weight. I mean, it's the whole package that's going on.
Yeah, and also at the same time, when it gets it through the blood-brain barrier, it affects how you handle insulin and glucose in the body, which is why we have an increased number of childhood diabetes cases, and the number's growing. The more fast food they eat, the more food they eat like this, the higher the diabetes statistics go.
Oh, but the high fructose corn syrup on the label.
Oh, well, we'll get to high fructose corn syrup, too, which is the other ingredient. And I might also point out, we happened to attend a meeting last night with a doctor who's involved with stem cell treatments and research, and we were looking at the research on stem cell treatment. And it coincides with our views on MSG that a lot of these strange illnesses and bizarre diagnoses of children, including things like Bell's, epilepsy, et cetera, Parkinson's,
MS,
all of them are caused in some part by MSG getting
into the brain. And excitotoxins.
And other excitotoxins, which are basically chemicals that get through the blood-brain barrier and excite your brain into some kind of frenzies. And you can include, again, cocaine, alcohol, and nicotine as excitotoxins. There's probably no greater excitotoxin than nicotine. So
I know.
I just went on with the world's longest answer. I hope we didn't put anybody to sleep.
I hope not. Are you awake, Simon?
Simon, you know that recording of the alarm clock you save for emergencies? You need to play the alarm clock right now.
Okay. It's not just food, though, that is a danger in the modern world. You live in the Los Angeles area, I think.
Yes,
I do. Yeah, I actually lived in San Diego for 10 years, and I spent a great deal of time in L.A. I remember one particular occasion. I was in Pasadena and could not see the mountains or the smog.
Those days, thankfully, are gone. Los Angeles is a testament to the fact that smog devices in cars can have a dramatic impact on the quality of your life. We live in an area in the San Fernando Valley called Tarzana. I was born and raised in the San Fernando Valley, and in the late 1950s, about the time we started to drive, we'd go, what's that gray thing out there on the horizon? And then it kept moving closer like a sci-fi moving. Then one day in the early to mid-70s, we were enveloped in this ugly, gray, dangerous smog that hung around for years. We had times where we thought we were living in foggy London town. And since the advent of smog devices and a number of other green initiatives in California, we don't see more than one or two smoggy days a year. And when I go to Pasadena, sometimes I can see from the freeway going up to Pasadena all the way to the beach to Catalina Island, which is probably, 75 miles. And I probably went the entire 60s without ever seeing downtown L.A. from there. And that's how dramatically that's improved. But still, carbon monoxide, like all the other chemicals, penetrates your blood-brain barrier and causes severe health problems.
Right.
I grew up in the area called Youngstown, Ohio, where they had steel factories. So I can totally relate to what you two are talking about, except I would have preferred California, I think. I just thought it was perfect.
I remember taking a trip up to where the Hollywood sign is and got right on top of the hill, and I was looking down at downtown Los Angeles, and there was this little cloud just sort of hanging over it.
Oh, yes, I remember the cloud well. There were times when we just didn't go out in it because we knew it was a health hazard. It was very scary here. The city was really alarmed by what happened to it. We went from being one of the most beautiful cities in the world to this awful, awful atmosphere that many of us thought were going to kill us.
That's, in my mind, a man-made disaster, but it's been cleaned up. I know California has made great strides.
It's beautiful here.
Yeah. But let's talk about a couple of other man-made disasters. 9-1-1, I guess the ninth anniversary of that horror happens in about a week.
Yeah.
the first responders, that there are lots and lots of people that are sick as a consequence of trying to help.
Yeah.
You know, we're messing with the environment.
Well, yes. Well, that was an unfortunate one, but at the same time, it points out two things. But before I do that, if there are any families at all that are listening to your webcast today, that all of us think of them, all of us care about them, and they should be aware that this country has not forgotten 9/11, nor the first responders who gave so much of themselves for this country. And the penalty for doing that is ingesting chemicals. For years we've heard conversations, if you have a fire, be careful, because when the carpet burns, it's toxic and the smell can kill you. We've all heard so many different versions of that, but no one experienced it more than the first responders who climbed into buildings with bellowing smoke. Every bit of that smoke was toxic. We were scheduled to be there on 9/11 for a variety of reasons. We flew home from Ohio, but our friends we were going to meet, we were going on a tour in the stock exchange. We're actually in the stock exchange high up looking at we're there when the accident occurred. And one of them had a pregnant wife who, believe it or not, went into labor from the shock of it. So they worked their way away from 9/11 towards the northern end of Manhattan, looking at the faces of people running towards 9/11 and the showering of this toxic ash and everything else. And I think that over a period of time, the health of the individual first responders will start, the problems will start showing up in the entire population, because so many people that day ingested high quantities of various chemicals that it is going to be a problem that goes on for a long time. So none of us should be ever forget the importance of dealing with this issue. We need to...
And what loving spirits. And I'm so grateful for people like that in our society.
Oh, I think these people that did respond deserve our support in every way possible. But
you know, Simon, one of the things that's really critical for somebody, and it's, again, because the enzymes are so important, I don't mean to harp back on it, but it will help heal their bodies. And I think that the lung tissue and the tissue itself, it may not be a cure, but it certainly could help support their body and help heal up some of the damage that's been done from the toxins. From everything I've read about the enzymes, it may be helpful.
Yeah, I found that, and of course a lot of studying of both Chinese herbs and us, that some of the enzymes, particularly bromelain, is very, very helpful with inflammation. So that's one of the reasons it's so helpful for anybody with arthritis. So if you put together, you can call it a cocktail if you like, of enzymes, it will have an anti-inflammatory effect on your body.
It'll help them breathe.
It'll help them breathe.
Yeah.
It clears. It just does wonders for people's health. But at the same time, what we propose in our book is helpful for everybody, but it's not the be-all, end-all.
No.
But you can do no wrong taking enzymes, because no matter what's going on in your body, they will help in some manner that you will not be able to predict. And if I can digress for a moment, I like to tell a story about my best friend who had a heart attack a year ago, January, and the doctors told him he was a diabetic. And it was just a horrible experience for him. He didn't quite know what to do. And finally, he, after reading portions of our book before his release, he says, "I'm going on your diet." And he gave up all these cytotoxins and chemicals and went on this. In fact, he even gave up Lipitor and went on our remedy for cholesterol. And for 6 months, he'd go to the doctor, and the doctor would say to him, "Oh, you're doing so great. Look how low your cholesterol is. Lipitor really works." Well, finally, he confessed to the doctor he hadn't taken Lipitor in months. But now, a year later, by January, 1 year later, he was no longer taking any diabetes medicines. The doctors agreed that he was no longer a diabetic. Couldn't figure out why. And, of course, he didn't want to press an issue.
And his cholesterol's low.
Right.
He dropped 30 pounds. And
without dieting, I might add.
It's just that the enzymes are important for in building up the immune system, which, getting back to the 9/11, it builds the immune system, and that's really important too. And again, it's not the be-all, end-all, but if it's any help at all to help somebody that's out there that might be sick, you know, please try it.
Right. You've mentioned your book several times, and I've mentioned your book several times. Where can people buy them?
Well, you can buy them on our own site, howtoeliminatepain.com, and they come out autographed, or they can go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or their favorite or not-so-favorite bookseller and buy it online. It's available everywhere, as I said, even in China, where they've given us a review that we can't read, but we're sure it's a good review.
Yeah, we tell everybody it's a great review.
Look, hopefully that they're not talking about MSG.
Yeah, really.
Well, in China, they've always used a natural form of MSG, derived from seaweed and a variety of mushrooms, tomatoes, and other things. Although at this point, we're beginning to believe everything in China is being slowly corrupted and contaminated by Western medicine or lack of medicine. And so I would not be surprised to find that they are now using a synthetic form of MSG, too.
And we're not preaching to, you know, throw out modern medicine. It's a combination of using modern medicine with your homeopathic, and homeopathic being of man, and we are of man, homo sapien. So it's the healing of the man, and it's combining the two, people who know about nutrition and can help people, and that's a great thing.
All right. I want to pose a question to you. I'll be waiting for the thud as your jaw hits the table on this one.
Okay, I'm hanging up now, Simon.
I want to talk about dinner last night. I decided that I was going to make roast pork. Of course, it came straight from the local Mega Mart.
Okay.
So, yeah, there's all sorts of unknowns in my big slab of pork.
Was it still moving?
No, it wasn't. No, it was most definitely frozen. Now, ever since I was a kid, I've been a fan of gravy. I don't care what you serve me. You know, I do like gravy involved. Now, I was in a bit of a rush, so I just went to my cabinet and grabbed a pork gravy mix with all sorts of unpronounceable ingredients in it, but it was quick, you know, cup of water, you know, the drippings from the pan, this gravy mix, who can go wrong? I did want to have some vegetables, though, and I'm a fan of cauliflower.
Sure.
Well,
sprouts.
Yeah, I went to my freezer and got out my pack of frozen cauliflower, and guess what? Because I knew I was talking to you folks today, I actually looked on the back at the list of ingredients.
It's shocking, isn't it? You go, wait a minute, it should just be.
And sure enough, it did mention cauliflower, but it had all of these other things as well. Now, I was feeling a bit lazy, so I said to my wife, Jan, how about we just do this as open-faced sandwiches? And she said, yeah, sure, that sounds good. So, you know, I ladled all this onto some nice white chemical bread. what could I have done instead?
Well, slitting her wrist would have probably been just...
Why wait, you know?
Well, Ashley acquired a habit that, you know, as a chef I should have thought of years ago. Every time we roast and we eat organic turkeys, et cetera, every time that Ashley cooks one of them, she saves the odd juice from it, puts it in, you know, lets it cool down, puts it in a package,
separates the fat.
Separates the fat, you know, and then puts it in the refrigerator. So when she wants to sit down and make a gravy, instead of having to pull something out of the freezer that's synthetic, she has the leftovers from the previous meal she's cooked. So she ends up making this incredible organic gravy. I mean, it's just...
It's so easy.
It's unlike any... I looked at it and I went, duh. All the years I worked cooking as a chef, I never thought of that. And I just shake my head because it's a simple solution to your gravy problems. So every time, if you switch to organic foods, every time you cook something, you can use every single part of that. Instead, what you're getting is a gravy that is basically a chemical gravy.
Full of MSG. I mean, it's loaded with MSG.
In fact, one of the biggest purposes of MSG is to do that, to improve the flavors of gravies. Because one of the things that MSG does, and that people who cook a lot understand this expression of letting your food set up, well, it's a shortcut. And anybody who cooks or goes, oh, gee, you know, I got to let my soup set up for 2 days in the refrigerator, by using an MSG product, they don't have to wait.
You know what? I'm embarrassed because I used to use gravy jars all the time. It was like, oh, quick pop throw, I'm done. Well, now I use organic arrowroot, which takes 2 seconds as a thickener. 2 seconds, I have gravy. And then, or I will use a, there's Arrow Hills. Is it Arrow Hills? I don't want to get
Arrow Mills.
Arrow Mills. That is a springtime pastry flour for a thickener. Takes like 2 shakes to throw this in there, and you have a low gluten, great tasting gravy, and it's done in 3-4 minutes.
Yeah. And actually, I want to point out something what Ashley's saying. Those of us who are into organic foods found out something that shocked us. They taste better than these genetically modified foods. And if for no other reason to change the genetically away from genetically modified foods, it's a chance you get to go back to the type of meals your mother made that were tasty, delicious, and made everybody go, wow. And so now I feel like I'm eating the food my mother made when I was young, because truthfully, most of us in my generation were raised on organic diets in the 40s, 50s, and 60s before all this craziness. In fact, in my youth, McDonald's was even organic. McDonald's didn't start putting this junk in their food until much later.
So did that answer your question, Simon, about your dinner last night?
Yeah, you obviously wouldn't have enjoyed it.
I might have enjoyed it, but it would have made me sick.
Oh, he would have been bed for at least 3 weeks. He would have been definitely crippled with arthritis today.
Okay, your new book that's just about to come out, can you give us a quick update on when we can expect it?
Well, we're trying to have it for the holidays before Thanksgiving, so people will think of us and give it as a Christmas gift. But right now we're 90% done. We'll be submitting it to our editor to finish the final one, and then it goes to the publisher, and this time our book is completely edited, so we're not going to have as many delays.
And it's an easy read. It's a very easy read. I promise you, Simon, it'll be an easy read.
Oh, you know, I honestly didn't mean that in a bad way earlier on. It was more that, you know, people get intimidated. And they're looking for information, but that they want it simple, bite-sized.
But you know what? It's the illnesses that have occurred. If somebody is ill, that's been a buildup, and so to have a simplistic, you know, simple fix, you took a while to get to where you are. It's going to take a little while to unwind. So if they take their time to go through this and digest this material, which we simplified as much as we could simplify it, and that it'll help them to understand their bodies a little better. They'll understand why they're getting sick. And once you understand the why, then you can make yourself well. It gets to the actual root of why people are sick. So at any rate, that's my simple answer.
I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we finally sold a book. Thank God.
A term that we've talked about, GMO, genetically modified organisms. I've been thinking about this long and hard, and I want to play devil's advocate just for a second. Haven't growers been selectively breeding plants and for that matter, breeding animals for hundreds of years? I mean, what's the difference?
Well, I think taking the tools of nature to breed animals or to even improve plants, whether, I mean, there are people who are expert in altering roses and there are new types of roses that are brought out consistently. That's different than playing in a lab. I mean, this, we jokingly refer to this as the Dr. Frankenstein lab, and it's not by accident. Basically, there are a bunch of mad scientists running with grants and money that are running around looking for solutions, because after all, if they don't get the grants from the government, they can't work. So they basically are on this kind of hunt. And I don't think it's in the best interest for everybody to have mad scientists creating things in laboratories that aren't proven in nature. So what we've done is we've created a generation of foods, chemicals, and other things that weren't intended by nature and certainly could not happen any other way than in a laboratory.
I read a disturbing news story, I think it was yesterday or the day before, that there's talk about releasing GMO salmon into the wild.
Oh, it's so frightening. It really is.
If you've read any tests on genetically, and by the way, they're called, it's farmed fish, spelled PH, which
yes.
is farmed the fish, and a lot of the writers refer to them as Frankenfish because we're not the only ones who see an analogy between Mary Shelley's seminal book, Dr. Frank, about Frankenstein. Because the real purpose of that book wasn't to create a horror movie, it was to warn society of the dangers of scientists running amok in our society.
And Europe protects its people. 100,000 medical doctors signed petitions in Europe in 1999 to ban GMO foods. 2 million Japanese people have signed petitions to ban GMO soy. So that in itself should say something to people. You know?
Yes.
And to allow this to happen with fish, oh, my gosh.
And by the way, what they don't say in the article of fish is where they've experimented and the GMO fish have got out, they attack the other forms of fish and eat them. So they become a predator. And, again, it's back to Dr. Frankenstein. You create something in a lab, and 3 minutes later it's attacking the town of Oxford, Mississippi. I mean, you know, you have to be aware of it, and I hope everybody in Oxford feels safe tonight. But
and I mean, it gets back to our earlier conversation about the salmonella. If the GMO food can change the DNA within an embryo, what do you think is going to happen with that salmon and the people who eat it? Food chain here. I mean, it's just think of the food chain.
Well, yeah, again, it's a scene out of the sci-fi movie where, you know, the creature bites somebody else and they become infected and now they're attacking. I mean, it turns into a kind of a pseudo-zombie movie in the most unattractive way.
I think there's been, so many situations where people have tried to change nature and it hasn't worked well. The one that springs to mind, rabbits in Australia. I mean, that didn't work at all well.
No.
In fact, I was watching a program on, I think it was Discovery or the Science Channel, about a variety of Asian carp that has made its way into the Mississippi river.
It's terrible.
Yeah, and it's horrific. They're destroying everything in their wake.
Right, and there's no stopping it.
No.
Maybe these corporations think they'll just force evolution to occur their way, and then everything will be okay. I mean, not to be sarcastic, but, you know, what else are you thinking, you know?
Well, actually, the truth is they're not really thinking about it because in their mind it's not an issue or a problem. These people actually convince themselves that it's not a problem. You know, or if they do know, then the word you attach to them would not be attractive. If you know that you're doing this to our society and you continue to do it, it is an extremely unattractive commentary about that individual.
That is truly malignant narcissism, where there's no empathy for the individual, nor is there any understanding for society.
Actually, one of the things that horrifies me is that people are patenting little bits of, quote, biology.
Yes.
So effectively, they are patenting life.
Yes, they are. They're patenting seeds right now, which is part of the GMO process, so that they can actually own that seed. They sterilize, the seed is sterilized, so it can't reproduce. And they are now patenting it in their name, so that you have to buy the seed from them. And the more this occurs, it's just not, it's not a good thing for nature.
Well, this ability to patent life forms has only come around recently, and a lot of it is because of the political might of the various companies that do it were able to convince Congress to allow them to have these patents. And why? Because it's their theory that without these patents, they can't be protected for all the money they've invested into this research. But in most cases, they already know the answers, and they know there's a natural way to do it. One of the discoveries in our book about enzymes was shocking to us. About the time we finished the book, we discovered a professor whose work largely goes unnoticed. His name is Hermann Emil Fischer. And many of the theories in our book, he won a Nobel Prize for in 1903. So we were mildly surprised to find this had been available to drug companies forever. And then we found that if you want to learn about it, you can just go to Harvard on a weekend, pay $5,500 for a session, and go to lectures on how to do many of the things that are contained in our book.
By people paid by the drug company.
Right.
Oh, I love it.
It's really something.
So the drug companies have known forever about the solutions in our book, but don't want to push them because they cannot patent them, and that's what brings me back to the previous part of your conversation. If they cannot patent a product, they will not release it or produce it. They will either buy it up or do something to make it ineffective because they cannot make a profit on it.
Oh, my. My producer is whining in my ear. Alas, I do have to bring this program to a close. But I do sincerely hope that both of you will want to join me again next week.
Oh, Simon, I would love that.
Why, thank you.
Thank you.
In fact, I'll give you a heads up. I'm working on something that I think you will both find fascinating. I've been in touch with some people from the Coastal Heritage Foundation of Louisiana. They're the folks that actually went out and had some independent studies done on rainwater as a result of the Gulf oil problem.
Uh-huh.
So I think we'll be talking about what's in the air.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. We would love that.
Right.
Well, we wish all your listeners a very happy Labor Day, and I hope everybody enjoys their weekend.
We wish you happy health. Good health.
Till next time, this is Simon Barrett for Blogger News Network, and I too wish everyone a happy and safe Labor Day. We will all talk again soon. Till next time, goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.